is now in session, and thank everybody for coming, and we're going to go ahead and what we didn't do in the last one, and I look at the audience out here, I don't know that we need to do it now, except for we do have a new member, and maybe we should go through and let everybody introduce themselves, and we will start down here.
I'm Cliff Bentz. Do you want some background?
A little background, yeah. Sure.
I'm from Ontario. I'm a lawyer. I've practiced law in Ontario for 30 years. Grew up on a cattle ranch outside of Burns and served on the Water Resource Commission for 8 years. Got off 10 years ago and been waiting to get back here ever since. So I was very fortunate to be appointed to take Representative Butler's position. Hard shoes to fill, but I'm happy to be here.
Thank you.
Happy to have you.
Yes.
So are you a Republican from District 60?
Oddly enough, yes.
Am I supposed to introduce
myself? Yeah,
everybody,
no,
out there knows.
My name's Fred. I'm George Gilman. I live in Medford, but my district, except for my house, everything is east of Medford. I've just been in the district by about a block, and it's a wonderful district. It goes to Lakeview and up to Prineville. It's all of Lake and Crook County, northern half of Klamath County, about a third of Jackson County, and a little bit of Deschutes County thrown in because they didn't think they had any place else to put places like Alfalfa and Brothers. Those of you that haven't been to Brothers, I recommend it highly. It's a great place. Actually, my whole district is a wonderful place to go visit. And if you have a job there, it's a great place to live. But unfortunately, we don't quite have the wonderful economic development that other parts of the state of Oregon have in my district. Thanks.
Thank you. Now that you're here, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, please. I'm the late Peter Buckley. thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Peter Buckley from South Jackson County.
Thank you.
Representative Greg Smith from District 57. I am neighbors with Representative Bentz over in Eastern Oregon.
I'm Tobias Reed from Beaverton, and I have a little piece of southwest Portland, some unincorporated Washington and unincorporated Multnomah counties.
I'm State Representative Carolyn Tomei, and I live in Milwaukee, and I also represent parts of southeast Portland, Selwood, Westmoreland, Eastmoreland, Brentwood, Darlington.
Thank you. Representative Terry Beyer, and I represent the city of Springfield. So I don't have too many, and part of Lane County, I guess. and this probably is more helpful to Representative Bentz to kind of get a background, because I think almost everybody out there knows the rest of us. So, and our great committee staff, Peter, Patrick. I've had Peter in my brain lately, so.
Yeah.
Who is so busy this session that I don't see too much of him, so if I don't recognize him, that's probably why. We'll go ahead, and we have some rules to adopt. And so if there's a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that the House Committee on Transportation adopt the rules for the 2008 special session as put on our desk.
Patrick, anything special about these rules?
Madam Chair, just as an explanation, these are model rules that have been provided to all of the House committees for their use.
Thank you. And comments? Representative Gilman.
Madam Chair, these rules are very appropriate, except for item 13. Minority reports. Those of you that have not had a chance to read this, this is a new definition for me. A minority in the House is 31. 31 out of 60, by my reckoning, is a majority. So why do we even call this a minority report? It is not a minority report, and therefore I'll be voting no on
Thank
this.
You.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You no longer need a courtesy vote.
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
With that said,
I appreciate your
I also will be a no on 13, or excuse me, on the committee rules as a result of item number 13. It concerns me that minority reports, as this body is normally and traditionally maintain them, is not going to be continued. And so I look forward to your leadership, but unfortunately I'll be a no on this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify, even under the rules, I understand that a minority report can still be filed. I look forward to working with Representative Gilman to file a couple minority reports on the bills that you have in front of you. And they can, obviously, they can still be filed. The minority report is the report of a minority member of the committee. Just to clarify that, and I do understand the concerns over it, but I'll be voting yes on the rules.
Thank you. And any other comments? Seeing none. All right. Yes. We'll go ahead and have a roll call.
Representative Banks.
No.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
No.
Vice Chair Gunn.
George.
Thank you. I couldn't hear.
No.
And Vice Chair Gunn.
Aye.
And Chair Byron.
Aye. Rules are adopted. And we'll, since we have a, we had a member sitting in, oh, he's still back there, yes, way in the back. Right, sitting in the audience, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3623. And Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it all right if I have Lauren Kowski join me?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston. I'd like to just address a couple of things. I know you all have heard quite a bit about House Bill 3623 when it was a concept, and you agreed to have it drafted, and you did, and so now here it is. I'd like to also thank Representative Reed. I worked with a mayor whose last name was Tobias. Her, it was Mary Tobias.
No problem.
Anyway, Representative Reed for also bringing this up and suggesting that it be introduced by the committee. What I'd like to do is just very briefly give you kind of the nuts and bolts of it. What the bill does is it creates a roadside memorial sign program to commemorate bicyclists or pedestrians that are killed in a motor vehicle crash on a state highway. There's some things though that have to be met in here. One is that there must be a conviction in the case, so it's not just any time somebody gets run over. I know that sounded crass, so forgive me. But there also has to be a request from the family within 18 months. The family must cover the cost of the sign. The sign would stay up for 3 years, so it has a definite lifetime. And state and counties can have separate programs. And one of the things, when we worked with Washington County on this, they were very reluctant at first to do this type of thing because there wasn't something already in state law. And so by having this, but then once we worked with Washington County, we took their model, and that's what we then brought up to put into the state law, because what we worked out with Washington County seemed to make so much sense, and all of the things that I just mentioned is what we put into the Washington County ordinance. So with all of that, the last thing that this does is that it gives the counties and the cities the ability to then pass their own ordinance to allow these types of signs on their own on their streets and roadways that they have jurisdiction over. One thing, I know the question came up earlier in some private conversations that I've had with regards to the flowers and the crosses and that sort of thing. This has no effect on those types of memorials that people have gone out and erected on their own. But what it does do is that it sets up a process so that in an area where a pedestrian or a bicyclist has been killed, if there is an appropriate place to post it, that the city or the county or the state could then post a sign, but it has to be requested, and as I mentioned, there are steps that have to be followed. And with that, I will stop. I'd like to turn it over to Mrs. Kautsky, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Good afternoon. My name is Lorna Kautsky, and I feel like you're all my friends now because I've met you so many times, and I've learned so much. I am here today once again to speak on behalf of House Bill 3623, which was prior known as House Bill 3020. Then it became Concept 81, and it was originally scheduled to be Eric's Law, who was my husband, who was killed while cycling on Tualatin and Sherwood Road. I guess I'm here to be the real person behind this bill and the real reason behind this bill. As you know, I sometimes get emotional when I speak about this bill because it's very important to me, and I've also learned throughout the course of this last year and a half of working on this bill and working with the legislature, it's also very important to several families in the cycling community. It was designed basically to help cyclists, memorialize cyclists and pedestrians, but throughout this I've met several cyclists who have contacted me wanting to know how they could help support this bill or how they could get this type of a sign for their family member who was killed. Luckily, I was able to give them some facts and some information regarding the criteria that was developed a year and a half, almost 2 years ago now, and they're very grateful to have that opportunity to memorialize their family and family member and to be a part of the system in the appropriate way. When this happened to me, and you've all heard the story before, so I don't want to belabor that to you again, but when this happened to me, at first, of course, you're devastated and your life stops, and then you have to regroup and you have to realize, what do I want to do with this? Do I want to see the glass half full or do I want to see the glass half empty? Luckily, I wanted to see the glass half full simply because of the memory of my husband, who would have done the exact same thing and look through life as a glass half full. So I decided to become proactive. I contacted like a little citizen, you know, little citizen that knew nothing other than teaching government to fifth graders, and I, which I really did a good job, guys. But I mean, now I've learned a lot more than I would have known. But anyway, I contacted Representative Kremel and asked him, thinking naively that this would probably be a pretty easy thing to do, but it's just like a please don't drink and drive sign. Well, now I'm on my third year of this, and it's on the third title, which is now 3623, and I realize now that it is a process, and it does take time, and I'm willing to take that time, and I'm willing to speak, and I'm willing to do whatever I need to do, not just for our family, but for other families, because I want to present an opportunity to them to be able to call their representative or to have this criteria in place for them to go through this. I've also... since I've retired from education, Beaverton Public Schools, I now work for George Fox University in the graduate program, and have made a lot of wonderful connections there, have learned a lot through that process as well, and they too in that community have been interested in what this bill has to offer and what I have learned through the legislative process. I also took a step, and I was appointed a year and a half ago to the Governor's Advisory Committee for Impaired Driving, and we meet the first Friday of every month to write legislation, draft legislation, find out what we can do. And I've also kind of, by default, become kind of a wailing wall or whatever for families who have lost members in the cycling community, and we know that has been a tremendous increase in that lately. So because I guess my name was out there, they call me and ask what they can do. So for me to be able to present this to them and say, here is an opportunity for you to memorialize your family member, I mean, that would be a fabulous opportunity for me and a fabulous opportunity that our state cares enough to think of the individual that way. And the thing that I learned is that my husband's death was not an accident, it was a crash. And I think that that is something that we put into the bill. I'm not sure that the person asked life was through a crash, which would be the person that killed my husband was a felon. And I think we've kind of fine-tuned it, and the best part of all, it doesn't cost the state anything. It's the price of the sign is incurred by the family. Also, it's not going to be plastered on freeways. It's not going to be a distraction or visual litter, because my understanding, it's county and, is that correct? County and city roads?
It could go on state roads also.
Okay, all right. So anyway, I guess I just want to say to you, I really appreciate your time, and this has been quite a learning process for me, and again, who knows if it's going to be House Bill 3696 next time, but I will be here. I will haunt you. And I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and to speak on behalf of families of victims and to speak on behalf of the cycling community as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any comments, Representative Gilman?
Representative Crummell, Burnside in Portland, a pedestrian walks out there, gets run over. The family of that pedestrian wants to put a sign up. The city of Portland says there's too much clutter there. How does this work its way out?
Madam Chair and Representative Gilman, that's a very good question. Nothing in this bill would require the city of Portland to put a sign up. It's permissive language. It would allow them to do it. And if the city said, look, there's already a gazillion signs there, and this is not a good idea. Now, and maybe what the city does is they work with the family and say, we can't go right at that exact location, but maybe there's another location along Burnside that they would say, it would be better here. The idea is that, and I think if you still have them in your files, there's a kind of an example of what the sign would look like. So it's posted and it's attractive, but it's not clutter and it's not big and that sort of thing. So I think. And knowing how sensitive the city of Portland is to this, I would probably imagine that they would most likely work with the families to figure out a way to be able to accommodate the family.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to compliment you on your perseverance, and hopefully 3623 is the final number you see on the bill, but it's not going to be the final effort you make, I'm sure, in this regard. And I've been doing a lot of research to impairment testing. I'd love to talk to you about it sometime when I've learned on that. I want to emphasize the fact that this sort of memorial can have a very positive effect. In my hometown of Ashland, there's a sign on the way in for Leah Castillo. Who was not a pedestrian, but she was a graduate of Ashland High School on graduation night in 2005, was killed by a drunk driver. And as you come into Ashland, you have to go past that sign. And so every kid that drives, every young person that drives past a sign when they come into that town, and most of them knew Leah Castillo. We're a small town. Mm-hmm. So as they drive in, they're remembering that sign right there. It says, don't drink and drive, in memory of Leah Castillo. And it has an effect, not just a memorial for the person, but also to, hopefully prevent anybody else from going through that pain.
An awareness, exactly. Thank you.
So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Greed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No questions for me, but I just wanted to echo the thanks. I have a friend in Washington County who was also affected by a similar situation, Mary O'Donnell, so I appreciate both of your continued efforts on it. I think it's an appropriate compliment to some of the other legislation we passed in the last session that helps cycling, and I hope you will continue to be a civics teacher for the folks, because we
need
that help.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for accommodating my schedule. I'm going to run now.
Amy Joyce.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Amy Joyce, Department of Transportation. I've handed out some very brief written comments from the department, but just from a very nuts and bolts kind of description of what the bill would do. First of all, the department is neutral on the bill, but what would happen is the department would write some administrative rules and create an application form for folks to apply for this sort of sign. We would process those applications when they came in, decide if the person qualifies under the criteria in the statute, where a sign could be placed, considering state and federal law and safety considerations, and then ODOT would erect the sign and maintain it for at least 3 years under the words of the statute, and the applicant pays the costs of the sign, and that's what the bill would do.
Okay, questions?
Yeah.
Oh. I knew she had one. I'll let her go first.
Well, my question was probably similar to yours. My understanding, this is just a state highway to which this would apply. Would not apply, like, to a city street like Burnside, right?
Chair Beyer, Representative Tomei, that's correct. The language of the bill says on a state highway.
And mine is a different question.
Okay.
You've seen that sign out in Washington County. You must have a ballpark idea of cost. I'd like to hear your guesstimate.
Chair Beyer, Representative Gilman, the engineering experts tell me that for the cost of fabrication and the post and everything that goes into it, you know, you're in the neighborhood of $300 to $500. That's what we're talking about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to follow up on Representative Gilman's question. Do you have any ballpark how many signs we're talking about?
Chair Beyer, Representative Smith, that's a fairly difficult question to answer. What we know a little bit, I can give you some numbers from 2006 in terms of folks who were victims, pedestrians and bicyclists on State Highway. In 2006, the numbers were five people killed on bicycles on state highways and 27 pedestrians on state highways in 2006. Now, of those, we don't know how many folks were convicted in relationship to that. We're thinking that perhaps we might see 10 of these applications in a year. We're not sure. A corollary might be those driving under the influence signs, which ODOT also does. And I'm told that when that program first came online, there was something of a flood of applications initially, and then they've really tailed off over the years. You know, maybe a pent-up demand initially, and then they have tailed off.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? I guess I have a follow-up. The figure that you gave, somewhere between $300 and $500, I know it says that ODOT will maintain these signs for 3 years. Does that include that, whatever you estimate would maintain?
Chair Beyer, yes, it does. The life cycle of a sign, unless it were hit or damaged in some way, a sign should hold up for 3 years without really any maintenance at all. But that figure does take into consideration the chance it might be hit and we'd have to replace it.
Okay. Okay. Seeing no other questions and no one else has signed up, then is anyone else in the audience? But okay. I'm going to close the public hearing and I'll open a work session on House Bill 3621. 3623. I'm going the wrong way.
Madam Chair, I move.
Oh wait, I'm sorry. I'm gonna close the work session. People in the audience, I posted this bill for 2 days for public hearing and possible work session. So in case anybody decides they want to show up tomorrow, I'm going to hold this over till tomorrow, and we'll do the work session then. And we want to thank you for coming today. And I'm going
to... Madam Chair, just to clarify, yes. There's full intention to have a work session,
yes,
and vote,
yes,
tomorrow.
Yes, we will be moving this bill tomorrow.
So it would be staff error, Representative.
<Yes. laughs>
And
chair error.
I didn't take that into account when,
yeah,
I was...
I have a question, Madam Chair. So yes. Is that required? Do we have to do that?
No, I don't think we have to. I think it's a courtesy, and there really isn't a big rush to do it, so I think I'll weigh in on the side that in case somebody decided they wanted to come, We'll wait and do it then. So, thank you. And now that, you know, it's a matter of practice, so we'll go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 3622. Yes,
thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3622 stipulates that violation of variance permits related to the required number of pilot vehicles or failure to follow a prescribed route is a Class A violation, punishable by a maximum fine of $720. It clarifies the offense of failure to remove a motor vehicle from the roadway. I think some of our people speaking will go into more detail on that. This bill has an emergency clause, and at this point, the bill also has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means, but it is my understanding, and I've spoken to the Speaker's office, this bill will likely not have anything more than a minimal fiscal impact, and the Speaker's office will likely give us permission to rescind that referral.
Yes. Okay. So we'll start out with Bob Russell and Don Miner.
Pardon? Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. You may recall from last session we had House Bill 2936, which we referred to as the Buddy Bill, because it had three unrelated pieces and we all got along and testified together. And it reduced the registration fees for Volkswagen vans that were used as a camper. The second thing it was intended to do was to raise the penalty for trucking companies that failed to hire pilot cars when they were required to do so. The third thing it did is it said if you're involved in a fender bender on the highway, move it off to the side of the road so you don't impede traffic. Well, we got it right on one of the three pieces.
Which one? I'm not sure we did that.
This bill is to fix the other two. After much consternation, we discovered that the penalty for the pilot cars, in fact, applied to everything that could possibly be attendant to a variance permit. And it extended to the administrative rules and all the rest of that stuff, which was never our intention. Our intention was to provide an economic disincentive where there was an economic incentive to violate. And so the pilot car was really the issue. In working with ODOT, we decided that there was also another issue. If a truck does not stay on the route that's prescribed in the permit, that also ought to be the higher penalty. Because if they were going on roads that they shouldn't be on, it's very unsafe. And there could be an economic incentive to do that because the route would be shorter than the prescribed route in the permit. So we added that to the fix. So the fix limits the higher penalties to failure to hire the pilot cars and failure to follow the prescribed route. I also supported the Move It legislation with the City of Portland. And the problem with that was we copied it from South Carolina, and what that originally said is that you cannot move it to the side of the road if the driver is injured. Well, law enforcement pointed out to us that the passenger could be injured or a pedestrian or a bicyclist, and they still didn't want you to move that car. So this changes the language to make it clear that if anybody is injured, you don't move it. It's only when you have a non-injury accident and the cars are capable of being moved to the side of the road that you move it to the side of the road. So I would urge your support. And I also understand that there is another friendly amendment making this, again, a buddy bill, and we're fine with the amendment. Don Schoenberg should be talking about that later.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. We were very interested in supporting 2936 last session. We have three factories up in the Staten area, and if homes or buildings produced there are too large, they have to come down a windy Almsville Highway. And to do that safely, they're required to have pilot vehicles to warn oncoming traffic. And we found some drivers would save money. It was a very small penalty if you got caught without it, and it cost quite a bit to comply. Marion County was discussing the possibility of closing that highway, which would have definitely made it very difficult for us to maintain those three factories. As we wanted to see a severe penalty imposed on people who avoided the warning vehicles or chose not to pay for them or decided to take shortcuts. As written, though, if our wide load sign was wrong size, it got the same severe penalty. And so this corrects that, and I appreciate your effort and the effort of the committee to allow this to come forward.
Thank you. Any questions for these two gentlemen? Everybody's got it? Thank you.
The message of this woman.
I know. Mark Landau has signed up. And committee, we have some testimony from the city of Eugene, and I know they're here. I don't know if they want to come up or they're here if you have any questions for them, though. So go ahead.
Good afternoon. Mark Landauer with Office of Government Relations for the City of Portland. Mr. Russell has adequately described the provisions that I'm interested in contained in Section 3 of the bill before you. Just like to express our support for moving this bill forward and would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. Anyone here? I guess my question is, I don't know if you are aware of the amendment that might be out there and if you have any concerns with it, if you are.
I have not reviewed the amendment, but I've been told that it has been reviewed by several individuals, and I don't have heard no concerns that have been raised by it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, we have Don Schellenberg of the mysterious amendment, which I don't think we have yet. So,
thank you, Chair Byer. Members of the committee, I'm Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau, and the author of the mystery amendment. The amendment, and most of you, I hope, got a copy of an email that I sent to you in preparation for this so that you would have some idea what was coming down the street here. A little bit different trying to lobby this session. I've never tried lobbying by email before, but it seems like that's about what you have to do this time. But the good part about this bill is actually we're reducing regulations here. Everybody always says, you know, if we could just get rid of some laws, we'd be a whole lot better off. Well, this one, while it's minor, it's a good amendment, and simply what it does is remove the requirement that on a application for a farm plate that you have to put the township in there. Spoke with ODOT and Motor Carrier Division, and they indicated that they reject a number of applications simply because they don't have that in there, and you have to have everything filled out. And they said, by the way, well, I don't see any reason why we need it anyway. Don't use that information. So on behalf of the mystery amendment, I'm here to ask your support for that when it does surface. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Questions?
To ask, is there potentially anything else on the forum you want to take care of?
Chair Byer, Representative Buckley, it was tempting, yes. But I refrained.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I know he hasn't signed up, but I see Greg in the back.
Vice Madam Chair.
Well, I do have a quick question, so sorry about that. And my question would be that obviously this is on the form now, so your intent would be that you would just accept the form that exists now without that information on it, and then print when you need to reprint the form, you take it off, or?
Madam Chair, for the record, Greg Delpani, Administrator, Motor Carrier Transportation Division. That's correct. We wouldn't destroy stock and reprint. We'd use existing stock and just take note that the requirement's been nullified.
Thank you. Any other questions for ODOT? Well, I've got them up here.
Well,
I see this as a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Am I on the right bill? Yeah.
Yeah.
So is somebody going to talk about that?
Well, and Patrick.
Peter Patrick
mentioned it. The Speaker's office wasn't sure, and there is no substantial impact on this one or any. So we're not going to move it today. We need to get the amendment, and we'll see if we can have the Ways and Means referral removed. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And so unless anyone else has any questions or anything for the good of the order, I'll close the public hearing at 3622. And we are adjourned today.